Hello and welcome to Sometimes Video Games, and this is the first episode in hopefully a series of a Sometimes Video Games book club thing that we're doing. First episode today, I am joined by Louis Bertwistle. How are you?
You're right, mate. How are we doing? I'm drinking some Coca-Cola.
Good.
We are not sponsored.
Hashtag not spawn. Who you may recognise from around the channel for Sometimes Video Games.
Yeah, I appear occasionally.
You do appear on occasion.
It's almost as if I am an entire third of the intellectual property.
What of those things, yes. I'm also joined by game producer Patrick Hargreaves. Hello.
Hello. I would like to clarify that I am not the other third of the intellectual property.
No,
that means
you are not,
no. Nor am I also sponsored by Coca-Cola. Oh,
I love that he calls you Patrick. That's brilliant.
I mean, I can call you whatever.
I mean,
you
it is my name, to be fair.
Yeah, it is his name, but I don't think I've ever called you Patrick.
No.
Yeah, well, not very likely.
But
yeah.
I think also, for the sake of this, using professional names
yes,
is the thing. And today we'll be discussing 2017 single-player adventure game Night in the Woods, developed by Infinite Fall. It's a story focused around a young woman named May Borowski, who recently dropped out of college and has returned to her hometown to find unexpected changes. We've all played through the game. I believe you two have only played through it once.
I have only played through it once. I was going to play through it again. I wanted to see what more the game had to offer, but then I decided that doing the same thing over and over again in Destiny 2 was more important use of my time.
Fair play. I have played through it twice now and also seen it played through once on a YouTube video. So I know both sides of the game. There is, how to put it some way. So there are choices in the game that you can make, which will determine how, what story we ended up seeing. There's a way in the game where you choose to hang out with basically either your childhood friend Greg or your other childhood friend B, and that whoever you hang around with more than the other one, that affects where the game goes. So who did you two hang out with most? Who is the one that you hang out with? Did you try and do both, or did you hang out with only one of them?
I only hung out with one of them, really, but I didn't realize how much opportunity I would have to hang out with the other, because I was like, I'll hang out with B, and I might hang out with Greg another time.
Mm.
And then I just ended up not
hanging out with
him. So I ended up just mainly hanging out with B, so obviously I got the B ending.
Mm. What about you, Patrick?
I also chose to hang out primarily with B. I didn't realize until partway in that you would have a limited amount of interactions and that would dictate the ending. But by that point, I'd hung out with B about three times and one time with Greg. And so I just continued from that point with B.
That's fair.
Who was the one I interacted with the most.
Mm. And I think the one I interacted with most on my first time through was B as well.
It's because it will. Do you know what? Okay, in fact, I don't know if it's just like, shall I tell you what? Like, say what kind of drew me towards B.
Go on. Let's do it.
So I went towards B because of her initial disdain for us as the protagonist.
For May.
Yeah, like there is a clear like I'm not about this person kind of vibe, and it's just like, okay, well, let's try and change that. I wanted to try and give B a more positive experience of the main character. So I was like, well, let's just hang out with B and see if good things come.
Which
with it.
I don't know if I don't know if B ever got a positive interaction with May.
I think they had quite a few positive interactions.
There are some, yeah, there are some for sure.
I actually found their story really touching in places. But I think what drew me to B initially was the fact that when Greg was first introduced, he was so high energy.
I
was so low energy at that point. Like, I don't have
the
energy to deal with you, Greg, right now. I'm going to go focus on
Greg. Greg is admittedly far too much energy to deal with.
Greg is
when you've worked a long day, you know what? I'm going to go with B, who's the definition of low energy.
True.
I'm gonna go that way.
B is quite low energy. Yeah, I agree. So what, so when you first introduced to Greg, were you both a bit put off?
No, I don't think I was put off. I found Greg really engaging and charming, but I was really invested in this sort of friends to, you know, friends that have fallen out becoming new friends again. I got really interested in that story. Yeah. And while I liked Greg, when you go down B's route, you only get like a very surface level look at him.
Yes, yeah. I think it's the same with both either way. Because this time around, I played through Greg's route because I did B's previously. And I think it's the same either way. You get a very surface level look at either character depending on which route you go to. So from Greg's perspective, B doesn't ever necessarily grow out of the whole, like, as Louis says, sort of initial disdain of the character. Although she kind of does, she kind of eases up, obviously, regardless, but there are definitely points where she isn't there. Like, there's no points where she's, like, super into being your friend or anything.
Yeah, it's obviously, not to get too into the sort of interpersonal relationships too early on with this.
We have had our camera death.
Yeah, it's fine. Yes. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's fine. I'll sort it out.
Yeah, my camera has given up. I do apologize.
It's cool.
Yes. So yeah, just to not get too far down one particular route with discussing this. I think this game does a very good job of really giving you an idea of, like, if you want to get involved in this relationship with this person, it's going to take all your time, and other relationships don't get as developed because this one's taking all your time. You're obviously, as you say, if you focus on Greg, then you don't have the time to repair your relationship with B over time. And if you focus on B, then Greg is just this cheerful, slightly violent person who's in your life.
Yeah, I think, honestly, playing it through a first time, it's best to focus on B, because then you get them, because you still get, like, Greg, you just don't get the deep moments with Greg where, like, he's actually talking about certain things about his own, like, thoughts and feelings. But you still get Greg. You still get, Greg, I've got cups on my ears. Let's do crimes. sort of shit. Like, I think, and that's kind of, like, all you really need to do to enjoy Greg is, like, hey, look, May, I've got cups on my ears. I've got to do crimes. Let's smash light bulbs. Whereas B is far more, she's far more withdrawn. So it's definitely, I think, preferred to focus on B in your first time around.
Yeah, I think with Greg, you can enjoy Greg from a distance. But I
probably
think
best.
Probably best, yeah. But I think B is someone who, like, you get rewarded for investing time with her because of the story that develops.
Absolutely. What were you going to say, Luke?
Yeah, and Greg is like, ha, cups, ears, funny, ha-ha.
He is funny.
One thing I would have liked, and maybe, like, it probably goes into more with the story, understandably, is I would have loved to have hung out with just Angus more.
Yeah, I think I was going to go on to that. It's not just, so the main cast of characters, you've got May Borowski, Greg, and B. But you also have, I guess, a few other characters that sort of are around. Angus is the other, I guess, major character there, who is Greg's boyfriend. And yeah, you really don't get to hang out with Angus as much. And I think the game would have I'm not sure. It's like, so looking at it from both perspectives, obviously you get more Angus in Greg's story, but you never really get Angus's. You don't get Angus's story. You just have the one. There is a one section later on in the game that you can hang out with Angus for one night, and that's it. That's the whole. That's all you can do with Angus, which is a shame, because I really love Angus. I think Angus is an amazing character.
Best evening of my life. Oh, I actually do really like Angus. I wish there was. I wish there was more Angus May interaction within the game.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it goes to show just how good a job they did with Angus, in that we only have one, let's be honest, major interaction between May and Angus. Mm. And that one interaction instantly makes you go, I want more Angus now.
Absolutely.
Like, this one interaction with a buff on this hill staring at the stars is so good. It'll leave such a lasting impression.
I think it's so great because you learn so much about Angus as well. Like, Angus has been there throughout the whole of the game, and he's just been sort of in the background and been like a rock for Greg and been supportive for Greg, and he's like friends with B, and he's been supportive of you like every time, regardless of what happens, despite the fact that he's not really like your best friend or whatever.
Also, the guy has one heck of a backstory.
He does, yeah, he has a great backstory.
Jesus, man, like, that is...
And it's rough, because you end up caring for him because he's a cool guy, and then you end up hearing his backstory and being like, oh, shit. You know?
Yeah, it's... because he's so... I think out of all of them, except maybe B as well, because B is pretty mature out of the four of them. I think Angus is sort of like the one who seems like he's got his got himself together the most.
I think the difference
and between... when you hear his...
Go on.
Sorry, it's just that when you hear his backstory, you think to yourself, wow, you are a lot more put together than you probably should be.
I think the difference between really B and Angus, though, is that I don't think Angus was forced to be that mature. Like, so Angus is, I mean, we're going into his story, I guess. Angus is being abused by both of his parents. And then was lucky enough to find Greg at an early age, and Greg really cared for him and was his supportive figure, I guess, there. So Angus, as mature as he is mature because he's mature. Whereas in B's story, it goes into how B essentially needed to be a full-time carer and a full-time worker and like a bunch of other stuff on the side. So like her maturity is entirely forced, and like it shows in her little interactions with May that she's not 100% mature. She's not like this mature figure, or rather like she doesn't want to be, but she's just being forced to be because her entire life has been, no, you need to work now, you need to be the carer, you need to, you know. So she's lost a lot of her childhood because of that.
Yep, you have job now. Get to it. Chop, chop.
Hmm?
That's basically her life.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, she's incredibly mature, but like Adam says, it's not because she's an inherently mature person or anything like that. It's just because her circumstances forced her to be like that. Like anybody who's had to look after a sick parent or been the main carer for, say, siblings or anything like that, you have to grow up, whether you like it or not. And it does, you know, I've not experienced that myself, thankfully, but it's, I imagine it can deprive you of certain things. And, you know, we get this heavy level of resentment from B in regards to May's, you know, falling out of college and stuff like that. And it feels incredibly real. I mean, one of the main things that struck me with this game, I hardly knew anything about it going into it. And, you know, you see this admittedly really charming art style of these animal characters.
The art style as well, yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. And, you know, I wasn't sure what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting incredibly realized human characters. Because everything about the story feels like somebody's telling me a segment from somebody they know or from their own personal experience. Like, being the first, because May's probably, like, immediately quite easily recognizable for people because, you know, first person in their family to go to college and flunked out of college and now has to go back to a small town where literally everybody knows who she is and their entire story before she even gets there. And they really sell that. They really help you feel what that would be like. And everyone's interactions with her also feel incredibly realized.
Hmm.
Like her mum, another fantastic character, just constantly pestering her, like, can you tell me what happened at college? It's constantly all the time.
Yeah, her mum's real good. I think that's a good point. Is like a lot of the characters genuinely good, well realized characters. Like, I'm sure we'll talk about the outside cast. I don't know how long, because I know Lou, you finished it in like you finished it very quickly. I don't know how long you spent with the outside of the main four.
How long did I spend with the main four?
With characters outside of the main four characters, exploring the town.
Not a ton. I did a bit of exploring, like early in the game, until it got later in the evening. I was like, I don't quite have the time to be doing that.
Yeah, sure. I think that's fair. I kind of took like the opposite approach to that, where I was obsessively wandering the entire town every single day, interacting with every single person.
I feel like you get a lot more out of the game if you do in fact try and interact with everybody. And like the first time I played through the game, I had a sort of a mix mixed approach where I interacted with a bunch of people, and I've missed people. There are definitely there are definitely like characters in the game that I totally didn't even realize existed in the first playthrough that I used, or rather I did know exist, but like not much of it. Like I'd recognize them, but I didn't know. It's really cool that looking like you said, like how well the characters are humanized. Not necessarily someone who's also important to the cast, like Germ, but even people like I think one of the characters that I recognize most of is Bruce, who's a homeless man just sleeping on the edge of town outside the church. And like his story is really human and interesting, and it's all built upon the whole idea of like the town council being not able to help, or maybe not willing to help, I don't know, a person who isn't necessarily from that town but has found himself there and doesn't have anywhere else to go. And it's such an interesting human tale about like bureaucracy, if anything.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I think it's just really, it goes to show that this was definitely a labor of love in a lot of regards, because as you say, even one shot characters that you don't interact with ever again after introduction are well written to the point where they have distinct personalities.
They do.
For example, there's the people that B is hanging with, this out of town college party. Where she's sort of trying to live vicariously through them and hasn't told them that she doesn't actually attend that college, which is quite a really sad moment, especially when May just ruins it by, as she says, being an asshole.
I mean, she doesn't know though. That's the unfortunate thing, is that May just simply doesn't know that like B is living this lie. Like she just simply does not have a clue, and it's, and I think that's really sad.
It's sad that B felt the need to, and I think again it's kind of this maturing too quickly thing. It's sad that B's missed out on, because let's be fair, if B didn't have to sit home and look after the shop and her family, she would have definitely gone off to college and done something at college and studied and become, you know, whatever it is that she wanted to be. And she's missed that opportunity to be a college student, and she's missed a very fundamental part of what would have been her life. Yeah. Just like all because of, you know, family issues and stuff. And it's sad. I think it's sad that it's not necessarily sad that, that May doesn't know, although it is sad that the two of them have grown that far apart. But it's sad for B because B's never going to experience that properly. And, you know, it's a life that without May that she's never going to know.
Yeah. And it goes to show that, you know, her bitterness towards May, because, you know, she had this opportunity that, you know, B obviously cherishes and values. And from her point of view, May just threw it all away.
Mm.
It's only towards, say, like the last quarter of the game, do we actually find out why May left college in the first place.
Yeah, I think she only really explains it at the end, doesn't she?
She does, yeah. When the big twist gets revealed, and I'm not sure we're going to that right now. But after the big twist gets revealed, then we find out her reasoning for leaving college, which, you know, anyone who's had any mental health issues can understand, like, yeah, all that. That makes sense.
For sure.
From your personal experience. But you, it's not necessarily easy to talk about that kind of thing, especially when people are, you know, prying you like a mother does, like B does.
Mm.
Like, why did you leave college? Well, I left college for this reason, but I don't want to talk about this reason, so I'm going to sidestep it.
Like, it's not even, I don't even know necessarily that May doesn't want to talk about her mental health issues. I think it's that she doesn't really understand them herself.
Sure.
Like,
sure.
There's a lot of point towards the, well, there's a lot of just conversation towards the end of the game where May's talking about an incident where, as a child, where she, like, savagely beat someone and she didn't realize what she was doing. All she saw was shapes, and she was having like an episode of some kind, and that, like, being cooped up in, I guess this is something we can all kind of identify with nowadays, but like throughout the last year of her life, she's just cooped up in her room staring at the statue across the street and feeling like it's sort of haunting her because she can't leave her own house because she just feels, you know, trapped and defeated and not okay. And like, no, not everybody knows how that feels, you know. It's really hard to kind of come to terms with the idea of, hey, my mental health is this. You know, I don't know if everybody would be able to just identify what that is.
Absolutely.
Look, I mean, speaking from experience, I can kind of confirm that. Like, it's like, as someone who experienced it for years, I always just thought of myself, it's like, oh, and I'm just putting it on. I'm just putting it on. There's nothing that's actually a big deal. And that's something I thought about for years. And that's like a personal experience I kind of shared. So it's something I can understand as something that you're not able to understand or identify. And I do think that is shown quite well through the game, because May obviously has some kind of problem that she just kind of doesn't really know about.
Yeah, yeah. She just doesn't get it, which is fair.
Well, it's exacerbated by the fact that they repeatedly touch on that all the issues are handled by the same quack doctor.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the doctor's terrible.
Yeah, the doctor's terrible because he's responsible for every kind of ailment, dentistry, doctoring, and psychology, when he can't possibly be able to do this. And his response to May savagely beating a fellow student is write a journal.
Mm-hmm.
When she obviously needed something much more intensive and needed actual answers, and she never got them. No. So she never really understood what was happening to her.
Again, and it was just, it's just like, you know, your typical, like, a small town doctor doesn't quite understand, like, things that are more prevalent in the modern day, or things that still wasn't understand or like understood when he was doing his like doctorate degree or whatever, like, you know, stuff like mental health, which wasn't as explored back then as it was today, you know. And it's just, obviously it must be like those old, just reminds me of like older, more archaic practices that doctors used to like do. It's like, oh, she almost killed someone. Oh, she just must be a bit mental. She's a bit
sure.
She's a bit wacko or whatever.
And yeah. Well, I mean, he is the only doctor in the town as well, to be fair. Like, we don't know what he studied. Considering he's doing everything.
So here's a really well, it might be an obscure reference. It might be not. But there's a cartoon I watched when I were a bit younger. called, I can't remember, something like The Excellent of like The Adventures of Flapjack or something.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a character in it called Dr. Barber, who he was a very creepy fella. He was a doctor and a barber.
That's a good career choice.
Yeah, so like crossover there, I suppose.
And both of his shops were like right next to each other and connected with a door. It was just so creepy the way he used to talk as well. You should look it up. He was a very interesting character.
We'll have
but yeah, to. That's kind of what that doctor reminds me of a bit, just with less of the creepiness.
Sure. So, I mean, we did bring up the sort of, I guess, the twist and where the plot goes. We've talked a little bit about some of the characters, but what do you think about where the plot goes in terms of how it is, like, how it's paced and how it starts and then where it sort of ends up?
I think it starts at a fucking crawl.
Sure.
like it starts annoyingly slow, I think. Like, it... You just get for like a huge first portion of the game, you're just like May doing life stuff with, like, you know, hints of something that may be going on in the background, but for the most part it's just, you know, May living her life, being with friends, and it's just that for a lot of the game.
Sure.
And then when it kind of picks up a bit, that's when it gets even more interesting, I think. When it eventually starts to explore the weird goings on, which takes quite a while to happen. Like, it gets all the way up until like Halloween, right?
Yeah, I think the first two chapters are kind of like just building up May and her life and her friends and stuff, and then you get into the shit that happens.
Yeah, so for me, that's when the game actually gets interesting.
Mm.
Because whilst I liked the other stuff before, like, it's the other stuff was fun and it kept me playing the game, but that's when the game, for me at least, started to get interesting.
Hmm.
Because I always like the idea of something more sinister going on in the background, especially being it's a small hit town. I mean, I know it sounds very tropey, the whole plot of the game, but I don't know. There is something that is quite interesting to me of just this whole sinister force going on in the background.
It's interesting because I sort of, and again, this is really a scary thing, I sort of had the opposite reaction to this, where I was more interested in the day-to-day stuff because I was invested in the characters and enjoyed seeing interactions.
Mm.
And then when he introduced what was implied and what is implied to be supernatural goings on, started to get taken out a bit. But what I enjoy about the game, especially in the twist, is that it is open-ended enough that you could interpret it in multiple ways.
Mm.
Because there's a heavy implication that it is a Lovecraftian twist. Can I go actually into?
Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
This is a very spoiler heavy.
I guess that's the point of the thing. Yeah,
that's a point of a book club is.
So I'll just give a quick rundown of what the actual main twist is, and then I'll give my sort of interpretation.
Mm.
So basically, the whole group, main core group of friends, stumble across various weird things going on, like one of their old classmates has gone missing. They stumble across a severed arm that's just lying in the street, which their immediate reaction is to poke it with a stick, which
of course I love
that whole interaction.
Of course it is.
You've never poked a disembodied arm with a stick? You've not lived.
You know what? I never have, but then again, I've never been faced with the opportunity, so of course. I've lived a sheltered life. There's a dark story there, and I won't go into it.
I haven't, by the way. I was just saying that.
Well, possible corpse poking aside, it basically ends with, I think it's in like the sort of Halloween or the fall.
You can't prove I didn't.
The High Fest. High Fest. Yeah, it's High Fest.
Yes, right. And May sees somebody getting kidnapped by something she assumes is a ghost.
She does assume it's a ghost, yeah.
And basically, it eventually gets revealed, and again, it's been a while since I played, but basically it gets revealed that a lot of the members of the town have been going into the old mines. This is an old mining town with a deep history of trying to keep what's theirs. And they have basically been taking the homeless, people that won't be missed, criminals, and tossing them down this hole that they believe contains an entity that is keeping the town alive.
Mm.
Either through, because they've been losing, like the young people have been moving out of town, businesses have been leaving, the town is basically slowly dying because it's quite an isolated mountain town. And these people have been basically sacrificing to this black goat, they call it, to try and keep the town alive. And what I like is the only implications we get that this is actually a supernatural thing is May having dreams.
Yes.
Now, these dreams aren't concrete acknowledgement that this is actually what's happening. These could just be dreams, and this is just May processing information. And this cult that's been going into the town could just be people who have become so desperate that they're afraid, they want to keep hold of the past and they're afraid of the future, that they're literally just trying anything at this point and they've just completely lost it.
Mm.
So you could easily say, like, yes, this is Lovecraftian horror, there is something in that hole, or there's nothing in that hole. And these people are basically deluding themselves.
I mean, can I just say something to that end, right? So when we hit the twist, so I thought, like, the idea of, like, the townsfolk killing people, like, that was really interesting. What they were doing it for suddenly dropped me deadpan in the water. I suddenly just lost interest at that. Yeah. At that exact moment. When they talk about this big eldritch creature in the hall, and I'm like, "Are you fucking for real? Is that like have we really? Has this really turned into a JRPG where the final boss is God or something?"
Sure, I don't think the thing is real. Like, I think the townsfolk, or like these people who are sort of, I guess, even living in the mines or something to that effect, I think they're just kind of very desperate.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea of it being a delusion. That's the only thing that lets me at least try and accept it.
Mm.
But just the fact that it just kind of discards everything beforehand and just randomly decides, oh, yeah, no, we're going to be... This is going to be Eldritch Lovecraftian horror now, all of a sudden, for no reason. Just with no prior exposition, it's just, it's this now.
I felt
a bit cheated.
I didn't feel cheated. Initially, I felt like it came out of left field, but then after a while, it didn't really hit that way for me.
Mm.
After I ruminated on it, because I think the interpretation that there is no supernatural aspect to this, I think works the best for me. Like, you could easily interpret it that there is a supernatural element. But for me, I think the fact that this is basically just a bunch of the old timers and the dads in the town who have no power over what's happening and are basically clutching at straws and falling back on old stories and are doing horrible things because they've literally run out of options.
I agree. Like, I don't think there's a real supernatural thing. I think, as I said, like, this group are desperate, and it's not like they're desperate for anything other than to make the town live. Like, that's what they want. They want the town to be alive, they want the town to be successful, and they want to protect essentially their home, and that's what they are thinking of. I think the goat thing is weird, but I don't think it really exists. I think May, being the only person who has any real interaction with this thing, kind of makes sense because May's obviously got her own stuff going on. But even May at the end says that she understands where they're coming from, you know.
Yeah. Because they acknowledge, because the only person who has direct dealings of anything quote unquote supernatural is May in her dreams.
Yeah.
But this, again, this is May who grew up reading ghost stories. This is May who found a severed limb. This is May who's got a history of mental health problems.
May's not the most accurate narrator.
Yeah, there's a few things that could just wipe away all the supernatural. Like her conversation with quote-unquote God May trying to explore existential thoughts in dream state. That's all that could be.
Like those dreams. So she dreams about stuff that are kind of interpreted into odd platforming sections where you've got to then grab people who are playing a musical instrument, and at the end of it you see a animal that's somewhat mechanical, usually, that I guess kills her in her dreams. I'm not entirely certain.
I think this is where I get into one of my criticisms of the game, in that those segments, there's a lot of symbology there, especially like the dream where she snatches the statue from her college and stuff like that, which feels well in.
I mean, I kind of feel like I'm on Paddy's side on this one. Like, I don't know if I liked the dream segments all that much.
Sure.
To be quite honest, like, to me they felt a bit unnecessary, or much less unnecessary. I just didn't find it very fun. Like, it was just kind of the same thing over again, but just in a slightly different setting. It wasn't there wasn't really much variation to it, and there wasn't really much exposition within those segments. It was just kind of
even now.
Yeah, like, even now, there's no real explanation for them. They're just in the game.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of subtext symbology you could extract from them, but for the most part, for me, they felt like somebody inserting a platforming section because they've had a long time of back and forth narration, as opposed to justifying their presence, really. I didn't feel like I got what they were hoping to give me out of it.
That's fair.
But I will say something I did like. This goes into one of my other praises. Is, yes, you run around, and as you say, you basically just collect ghosts playing musical instruments. But each of the ghosts you collect, their instrument gets added to the background score of that section.
Oh, it's so cool.
And builds, which is a very cool effect. I really enjoyed that.
Mm. It's really cool when you notice it as well. Like, because you immediately notice it because there's like a bit of background music, and then all of a sudden, like, a tuba or a saxophone or whatever will play, and you're like, oh, ooh, interesting.
Yeah. It is very good. They did a very good job with that. It was something that wasn't necessary.
No.
But it was a nice addition.
Yeah, it's a nice little addition. And
I think it just segues into, not going back and forth on this, is the musical score.
Mm.
I've been playing the soundtrack to this game on loop ever since I finished the game as like my work background score.
There are a few pieces of music, particularly in the town, where I think it's the first one where it starts raining, the first day where it's raining, and I just had to sit there and listen to it. And I'm like, oh shit, this is a pretty incredible piece of music.
Oh yeah, there's like, I think it's like one of the ghost ones as well. It's called something like Astral Lane or something like that, and it is just hauntingly mellow and beautiful, and a lot of the soundtrack and the sound design as well was just really well done. Again, like with everything in this game, the score, the visuals, everything is very well crafted. Like, they've obviously taken their time with a lot of this and done a lot with a little.
Yeah, I think so.
and just one of the little labors of love. I'm sure you probably both caught on to this. One of the things that I was most enamored with is there is no VO in this game whatsoever. It's all pure text based.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen a game that's used text dialogue as effectively as this game does. And I think
not since the 90s anyway.
Well, the 90s just slammed text down and you had to read the equivalent of Ulysses in order to get to the next gameplay section.
I enjoy
games back then were just books.
Basically.
I enjoy books that the characters are color coded. I'm not sure if every character is color coded, but at least the main characters are color coded.
Yes. Yeah, well, you see that. You'll see that in a lot of point and click adventure games, or at least some old ones anyway. Like they used to have color coded text for each of the characters.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it was to know like who was speaking, because after a point, I think that's what it originated from. But then after a point, it just became for aesthetics to give each character their own colored dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think in this it gives them. I think the colors also represent their personalities a little bit. Like Angus is that sort of warm, deep red color, and it's really interesting the way they've done them. I think.
I think what sold me on the delivery of the dialogue was the fact that they managed to effectively convey an awkward pause in a conversation.
That's a few times, I think, right?
Many times, because these are an awkward group of people.
They are.
Where there's just uncomfortable silences. I don't think I've ever read text where I could feel the uncomfortable silence. Maybe that was just me, but I thought it was just very well delivered for my
feel the silence within silence.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which was just like, I don't know if that's because I'm really heavily invested in this, or they've just expertly paused that dialogue tree in just the right way.
I think so. There's a lot about the dialogue I generally really like. I love how the characters all feel. Like, I think this goes back to this, them sort of feeling human and stuff as well. Like, they're written very humanly as well. They're written as if they would speak like a real person would speak, I think, at least a little bit. Like, I love, and I don't know how much of this you'll see in just doing Bee's Run, but like how Greg and May have this like conversation with each other essentially every time about, I wish you die in a fire. I wish you get run over. I wish you get stabbed in the face and then a whale eat your face off.
I love that.
Like, it's just
I hope you get kidnapped by a death cult. It's ironic.
It is ironic. It's just loads of like little dumb shit. Like, they don't even. I think it probably is more obvious with Greg and May than it is with Bee and Angus and that, because they have the closest relationship. But they're definitely the conversation written between them flows in a certain way that a real conversation would flow, and I think it's very impressive how well written it is.
Yeah, I all these characters are written really, are written really well, and their relationships, not just their personalities, their relationships toward other characters comes across really well. Like how, you know, Bee sort of starts to warm up to May over time because May has a talent of just talking her into doing stuff.
May has a talent of bullshitting her way into anything, to be fair.
Basically, May is an expert bullshitter. Well, she's not. She's really bad at bullshitting, but she does it with sincerity.
She does, yeah. That's what wins the day.
It is.
Well, and also, something I'm going to say about me. Oh, yeah, there was like one character in the game that I didn't like, or that I really disliked, and that was Bee's other friend. Sure. Her, like, college friend.
Oh, right, sure, yeah. Oh,
yeah. You're a dickhead, man.
Oh, because she spent the entire time calling May a dickhead.
Yeah,
true. And then May was a dickhead. At what point in that
May is a dickhead, but May's a well-meaning dickhead, at least.
And she's aware of it, which I think sort of she knows that she could be an asshole and she feels bad. Which I think, again, because that's something I really liked, that they made the main character not inherently likable all the time.
Yeah. It's good. It's very good that she's not a perfect being, I think.
Yeah, she's not a Mary Sue. She's not, you know, always charming, always funny, always has the right idea at the right time.
Mm.
No, she puts her foot in it 9 times out of 10, and she has no idea what she's doing. In fact, every good idea she has come from somebody else, and she's just rolled with it.
Yeah, and especially the bit where she's like, we're in the middle, yeah, let's steal! Let's commit actual crime.
Let's commit crimes, yeah. But I think a lot of the B interaction, especially early on, is because she's trying to get close to B, but the only other person she's ever been remotely close to is Greg, and Greg and May. Greg and May's relationship is based on the fact that they go out and do stupid shit and commit crimes and stab each other in the hand, like. I don't know if you played.
Excuse me.
I don't know if you played. So there's.
I haven't played Greg's yet.
Yeah, there's a little mini game in Greg's route. There's a few little mini games in Greg's route. Where there's one where Greg and May go on a bike trip to a forest, and they play like some sort of knife game on a tree log, and they just take turns repeatedly stabbing each other in the hand.
Okay. Yeah, I feel like Greg is. The friend you have because you've always had them and you have a ton of inside jokes, but you're just a little bit afraid of them.
I think so. What's interesting about Greg's, I don't want to, because I know you two want to play through Greg's mode maybe as well. But what's interesting about Greg's thing is that actually May's that character, not Greg. Greg is the character, if anything, who was a delinquent. But is trying, for Angus's sake, to sort his life out so that they can move to a new town. So they can leave Possum Springs, go to Bright Harbor, make a proper life of it themselves. And now that May's come back, he sort of starts sinking into his old ways a little bit and being like, let's go commit crimes, let's go make a giant robot baby, let's go stab each other in the fist.
Let's make a giant robot baby. Is a fantastic sentence.
You'll get a lot of fun with Greg's route, but it doesn't. It's not spurred by Greg. It's spurred by May, and Greg, on Greg's route, essentially has to deal with the fact that Angus is like.
It's better to go with B because you get more positive outcomes. Where just hanging out with Greg is just a bad influence.
It's fun though.
From the implication is that it's your unintentional bad influence.
Yeah, but then Angus has to like basically say no.
The Greg ending is the bad ending. We need a chill. It's confirmed.
Angus basically tells Greg off and May off at the end of it, and he's like, "Look, we need to do this to fix our lives. May, you're being a bad influence. Stop." Because if Greg goes to jail, we don't know what we'd do. Sort of thing, you know? Yeah. So, like, it doesn't... Yeah. It kind of splits off in that way, I guess. But, like, yeah, Greg's not necessarily the bad person in that friendship. It's May.
Yeah. It's also refreshing because it feels... They could have told this story with teenagers.
May's 20, yeah. May's 20, but, I keep forgetting that, that's a thing.
Well, they're all in their 20s, but they're all in their early 20s, where they feel like they should be grown up, but they're really not.
But they're absolutely not.
Where they're sort of halfway points between being grown up and having sort of no idea what the fuck they're doing. And I think they really sell that feeling of early 20s. Because, again, we see this with B, where she's sort of like the model of maturity. In actual fact, no, she isn't. She's a bit petty and she's resentful and she's longing for something else. Greg is trying to have this adult committed relationship, and the second his childhood friend comes around, he's like, knife crimes.
Knife crimes. Hey, to be fair, I mean, holding a knife is a crime, but maybe, I don't know, it's America, but just stabbing your friend in the fist is not a crime if they if they consent.
It depends if they also stab you in the fist, and then it's mutually assured destruction.
Yeah, it's mutually assured destruction. Well, I mean, you play the minigame, so it's up to you how mutual it is, but...
And I like that it's very mature and not mature at all. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah, it's good. I think there are a couple of characters that I kind of want to go over as well. I don't know whether you because most of these characters are optional. How do we feel about Germ?
I think Germ's cool, honestly.
Did you spend a lot of time with Germ?
No, basically none.
Did you not spend much time with Germ either, Paddy?
I spent hardly any time with Germ, and I did not get Germ at all.
So there are two characters in the game that you can spend optional time with that won't spend time that you spend... Basically, you know how your time split between Greg and B? Well, there are two characters that you can do extra optional stuff with. One of those is Germ, who will ask you to go play with him or ask you to go hang out. And you can do that without spending any time. And he goes through his sort of life as a basically just sort of as an outcast kind of thing, you know, like he just kind of is there, but like he is actually really well meaning. I just completed his story today, actually. I'd never seen his full story completed.
Germ,
I completed his story today after like just not seeing it being done, because you hang out with Germ maybe once or twice. And he's actually really cool. He brings you to his house and lets you meet his parents and his grandma and has a big trampoline in his back garden. You all have a trampoline thing. And like, he's just poor.
The best interaction. Cool. Yeah, he comes across as like, if you were in high school, as the weird kid you always hang out with. But there's never an explanation as to why you hang out with him.
Yeah, he is definitely the weird kid. He is like, the weird kid.
He hangs out in parking lots speaking to homeless people. Like,
I imagine he talks like this in my head.
Sure. The other character, the second character out of the three that I want to bring up is the other person you can spend time with optionally, who's a mouse called Laurie. And I don't know if either of you would have even noticed.
I don't know if I encountered Laurie.
Or if I did, I didn't do it enough to where she's stuck in my mind.
So she's kind of stood. She's kind of sat on the rooftops of one of the areas, and she just is chilling there. And she talks about horror films and stuff like that. But actually, what her character goes into, she's 5 years younger than May, so she's 15 and she's still in school. But her character's interactions with May are really interesting because they kind of get each other. Like, in a weird way that, like, you would never have understood. You'd never really get. You're like, it's just a sort of, we get each other. We go through the same sort of stuff. We, you know, have the similar sort of feelings. I think she first of all comes up to you and starts calling you killer.
We understand each other so well.
Yeah. And then you end up just hanging out at the train tracks and crushing shit. But she's really
like you cool. Do.
She's just genuinely really interesting character that I think is almost too optional. In that no one even knows that she exists.
Yeah. The only interactions I had, because I know you can climb the rooftops and you can interact with some people there. And I think the only optional thing I did was creating May's army of rat babies.
Yes, rat babies.
Rat babies that overrun the outer town.
Rat babies do overrun the food donkey out of town, which is great. Yeah. I do like the rat babies.
And it has this really serene but weird moment to like the main portion of the game where she just chills out in this abandoned supermarket surrounded by rats. And she's like, this is good. This is chill.
Yeah, like the idea of rats concern me.
It is a weird optional thing that I didn't know why
it
was doing.
It still weirds me out. The characters are animal. Yeah, there are animals.
Yeah, they're anthropomorphic animals, but there are real normal animals also in there. So, like, there are dogs on the street, there are cats on the street. Yet May is a cat.
But there's no mention of it, so no. You could easily replace every single character in this with a human.
You could, yeah,
and absolutely. It wouldn't impact the story in the slightest.
Mm. Another optional thing I wanted to mention was, you know, the musicians in the dreams. Did you ever encounter them in the real world?
No.
No.
I didn't think they were.
They are about. They do hang about.
Really?
Yeah. There's a later on, after all the dreams are sort of finished, they can also be found on some of the rooftops or in some secret areas, just playing music. And you can chat with them and have a nice little conversation.
Oh, one thing I mentioned. So, you know, when the whole, towards the ending of the game, on like the last day or whatever, did either of you explore the town to see if any of the NPCs were missing?
Yes.
I didn't see specifically if any of them were missing, but I think I checked the first time.
I saw one missing.
I saw one or two missing.
Who was missing?
So the one I saw missing was the two guys outside the bar.
Ghost Mantis.
Constantly talking about the local football team.
Yeah, Ghost Mantis. I think that guy was leaving, though. I think that's a different thing. Maybe it isn't. But I do remember him saying something about he's starting for a new job and his wife and kids were excited about moving to a new place. So I think he specifically moved.
Well, did he? Because I must have missed that, because I basically, because his mates just stood there like, do you want to talk about sports?
There's also coffee and cigarettes guys outside the office.
Yes.
One of them left, but I also think that, I'm not sure whether he died and was in there or not, because he changed job. He went to work at the Ham Panther, I think.
Ham Panther. Ham Panther.
They're great names, yeah.
Because they have this cave-in at the end of the game, and it's implied that they're all, like, you know, local dads and town leaders and stuff like that. So you're basically like, oh god, did I just accidentally kill someone's dad that I know?
But, like, the town council is still there, and all of the NPCs with names are still around. So it's interesting. Someone's gone, but we don't know who.
Yeah, there's like eight missing people. Well, eight additional missing people, because there's quite a few missing people thanks to those assholes.
Well, I think Molly, or Aunt Mallcop, sort of tries to bring it up with you at the end, but then kind of just says, no, never mind.
I kind of like that their relationship never progresses beyond, oh, you're a cop, fuck
so,
you.
So, like, at the last day,
this is good.
So you know how you see, like, the guy falling down when he tries to grab May during the...
Yes.
What causes the cave in?
Mm.
Yes.
And you see a cat. I thought that was her, and then you just see her the next day and I'm like, oh, I guess not then.
No, May's fine, yeah.
I did read a theory on that, and again it was just a very loose theory that he was the missing kid.
Oh, sure.
From the poster in the town, basically their childhood friend who's just been brainwashed.
Oh no, Casey.
Yes.
So in the cave-in, well, before the cave-in happens, you get two dialogue options at one point. One of those dialogue options is just the word Casey? Who is their childhood friend, and they admit that they killed him.
Yeah,
because he was a delinquent and he wasn't getting up for much. In which Greg was like, "I'm going to kill these people."
Yeah, they imply that he was basically, I think it was like dealing drugs or something like that, and they thought it was like, oh, well, that's a good enough reason
a good enough reason to kill him, yeah.
And it's fucking horrifying, conceptually.
It's not a good idea. The last character I really wanted to talk about was the janitor.
Yes. Yes, the janitor.
Do you guys have thoughts on the janitor?
The janitor. Scruffy. I'm Scruffy. The janitor.
He could be Scruffy. He does give off Scruffy.
That's what he is. It's what he is to me, because he just appears like out of nowhere, like where he's needed.
That's the thing. Depending on how you interpret the story with or without a supernatural element, depends on how you view the janitor.
Oh my god, maybe the janitor is God.
I heard many things about saying the janitor is the forest god.
Yeah, from the Harvest Fest.
Yeah, from Harvest Fest
story.
Well, he turns up at the Harfest story as well, as the forest god, right? Or was it not the forest? He's just turned
No, up. He turns up as the forest god, but he self-inserts weird dialogue.
He does.
That wasn't part of the script.
And May's like, what the fuck's going on?
She's just ad-libbing at that point.
I mean, I always ad-lib anyway, because it's just funnier to see May do stupid shit. But...
yeah. But yeah, he's one of those characters, and you're like, I'm still not clear on the how I interpreted. Like, I thought about him a fair bit, but because I don't see the end game having a supernatural element. If there was going to be a supernatural element, it would be the janitor.
I think he's the only one that's the sort of outlier that isn't well or easily explained.
Yes, which I kind of like, because it adds a little bit of ambiguity to whichever view of the story you take.
I agree. So much. Do we have any favorite characters that aren't in the main cast? Ooh, I've got a couple of really fun. I really love Selma's.
Oh, I didn't interact with Selma slightly.
I did like Selma's quite a bit.
She's fun.
I really like Selma's end, like file entry.
Yes.
Ta-da! It's Selma's.
I loved her poetry group in the library.
In the library, yeah, it's so good. The dude who's making fish poems.
I didn't attend that.
Oh, did you just leave? Oh no.
Yeah. I wanted to finish the game.
But I love that there's a dude who's just making fish poems about the fish in the tunnels. He's a weird guy.
You can find him continuing to write stories about fish in the tunnels, and he just asks to be left alone to finish them.
He does.
Like, you do you, buddy. You do you.
I think also... I'm trying to think of one. I also really like, and I didn't talk to him at all on my first playthrough, but there's a dude in one of the windows. He's just sat there. Like, he's not, like, looking out the window, reading a newspaper. And you can talk to him every day and just ask him what the news is. And he's my favorite. I love that guy. Like, one of the first times he talks to you, he goes, you go, what's the news? And he goes, young girl, dead, fell off a rooftop.
That's how I want all my news delivered.
And May's just like, I'm not gonna fall off a rooftop unless you push me. And he's like, maybe it was murder, who knows. Dude, he just seems like a really chill dude.
I really like May's mum and dad.
They are great. Both of them are incredible.
I think her dad is really, really chill and cool, and her mum is basically just May grown up.
I don't know. I think they're just good parents, personally.
And they are good parents, absolutely.
They are very good parents. Because I like, because there's an implication that her dad had a drinking problem in the past.
Yes, it was mentioned that he had a drinking problem in the past, yeah.
Yeah, and it's not made heavy focus, because it's like a thing of the past. But there's also an implication that whatever issues May has, her mum might have something similar. Because she has like big dips in her mood. Like, there's a particular moment where they fall out over very little things and then, you know, get over it very quickly, which is a detail.
Yeah.
That was, again, if it wasn't there, you wouldn't necessarily notice it, but its inclusion was interesting.
Absolutely. And I think it's really cool, you talk about May's dad, and that, like, because I think it sort of comes up when Angus and May are talking about Angus's history and how Angus's dad used to beat him and his mum used to lock him in the pantry and stuff. And it seems very much like May and her dad are friends. Like, May's dad stopped drinking specifically because he didn't want to put May and May's mum at risk. You know, he was clearly in a bad place. Maybe he was an alcoholic, or maybe there was worse going on, but like, he worked hard specifically to improve himself, and it goes to show, like, May can spend evenings with her dad watching fucking Garbo and Malloy and
yeah,
and just enjoy
Garbo and Malloy,
you know. And it's really cool that he's changed.
What a show Garbo and Malloy is.
I don't know if I understand Garbo and Malloy.
It's like
Whopper.
It is vapid late night TV. But I also love the fact that they seem to work opposing shifts, so you only ever see her dad at night for the most part, and you only ever see her mum during the day.
Yes.
Apart from rare moments.
There's just like the very ending when they've both taken the day off work, or yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. You see her mum in the church. Like, I never encountered her in the church because I never went to the church.
You never went to the church?
I went a few times.
I didn't know how you got there.
You need to. So you can't go there for the first few days, but after a few days, it opens up a bit more.
Yeah.
All right. I thought that was just like, because where you go to the church, I just thought that was inexplorable.
Yeah. No. The roadworks make it inaccessible for a little bit, or the then he fixes a light. I think a dude fixes a light, and then you can go in there.
A dude fixes a light.
Well, one of the lampposts, not like just he changes the light bulb.
You can meet the town pastor.
Yeah, you can meet the town pastor, Kate. She's cool. Yeah. And then that's where you meet Bruce, the homeless guy, and a bunch of shady teenagers.
The shady goth kids who pretend to be mind readers, but they're just assholes.
It's great.
Their interaction.
Shady teenagers, eh? Pesky teenagers.
I absolutely adored the really frank discussion when B and May are trying to get through a gate and the shady goth kids walked up in the gate and listened to answer three incredibly invasive personal questions. And he's just at the end just like, well, that was shit. Go on in. And I'm just like, you little assholes.
They're real assholes.
It just tickled me, especially when Mage actually just calls him out. It's great. I also love the teenagers that hang out in the sewers.
In the underground. Yeah, they're great.
And Mage just rolls
I interacted
up.
With those on the first day.
I
pretty much interacted with everybody on the first day.
Mm.
I love those interactions because the second that kid gets kidnapped by the cult, he starts going up to the teenagers being like, make sure you've got a buddy.
Yeah, are you okay? Be careful. Like, she gets quite motherly about the teens, right? She's sort of like, hey, you guys
need to be
okay. She
does, but they get weirded out by her.
They do get very weirded out by her being particularly caring, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a thing.
I mean, I feel like that's a pretty reasonable reaction to have.
I guess she is a stranger and these are random teenagers on the street, so yeah, probably.
Yeah. To be honest, though, May is the strangest person in town, besides maybe Joe.
Yeah, I don't know if she's the strangest person in town, but yeah, she's definitely probably the most infamous person in town.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I mean, just to summarize, basically just my general thoughts and stuff like that on the game, I absolutely loved playing this game. I think this is a game, if you have the patience and the time, just to take it as an incredibly slow burn. Like, the way I played this game was for it. You know, I cleared schedule space specifically to play this game.
Nice.
Because I wanted to fixate on it. And for me, that's how I got the maximum enjoyment out of it. And I just love these characters. I think I'm going to take about a year or so break and then do Greg's story.
You'll rediscover a lot. Like, I took a long break. Also, this time around, so this is my second time around playing it. The first time around, I played it a bit more focused on the story and less focused on all the side stuff. I don't know. I know Louis didn't play much, but I don't know how much Demon Tower you ended up playing.
I played quite a bit, but I hit a wall with it.
Oh, I got to a point where I'm like, I cannot do this anymore. It's too difficult.
Yeah.
How difficult does it get, Adam?
So you start off with like 8 life or something like that, and every time you finish a floor, your maximum health is reduced. But you don't get any extra power-ups either. You get extra dash function, so your lives turn into dashes, I guess. Like, that's how it works. So when you get to, like, the floor that's third to last and you have 3 health, or two health, you're like, oh, I guess I can't get hit more than once, or I'm dead forever.
I'd like, ooh, I would be. I think I might be interested.
You may be interested. It's a roguelike. It's cool. I also spent a lot of time playing the songs that you play as band practice. Die Anywhere Else is absolutely one of my favorite songs. I love that
song. I think my only issue is that because I was so busy, because it's quite a hectic song.
Yeah.
And May's line of, I literally don't know how to play this song to every single time it comes up, just killed me. But because they're quite hectic songs, I never actually got a chance to read what the lyrics were. And I need to actually find what the lyrics were for each of the songs.
There are some covers out there on YouTube of the songs with vocals. There are a lot of them out there on YouTube, especially of Die Anywhere Else, but some of the other ones like Weird Autumn as well.
Oh, check them out.
Pumpkinhead Guy is the only one that I found very difficult to keep going with the song, because it had a lot. There's a lot of notes in there at one point.
Right, Adam, you're going to have to do some magical editing here because I really need the bathroom.
Okay, cool. No worries.
Okay.
I can do magical editing. That's fine.
I realize it's not a live stream, and I have to hold it in.
Yeah, it's not a live stream, yeah.
No, you're free to go.
But yeah, I don't know. I enjoy the game a lot. It's a very fun game.
It has quickly become one of my cherished games. It's not a game that I'm going to come back to a lot, but it's a game that has stuck with me, and is going to be fondly remembered by me.
I think I've got my play worth, because I watched, so the first time I even heard of the game was a YouTube channel called Playframe were playing it through, so I watched them play it through, and they like voiced all the characters, which was fantastic, and then I played it through myself, because I'd enjoyed them playing it through so much, and then this is my second time playing it through. I did the exact opposite of the decisions that I did last time, so I think I've explored everything, at least. Well, maybe not even everything, but I've explored a lot of what the main game has to offer. And I know that there are two extra bits. There are two extra bits of download content, or like two extra bits of content. There's The Longest Night, which I think is like a 2-hour little thing with the four main characters.
Really?
Yes. There's The Longest Night, and I think there's a Constellation thing as well. I'm not sure if
that's I'll have to check that out, because I got the game as part of Epic's game giveaway.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I think I got it up free. I think the one I played was the one free on Epic as well. It should have extra stuff on there. I think if you go into the extras menu in the main menu, there is an option for The Longest Night. I'm not entirely sure what else extra is. Let me check. Not in the words.
So I'll definitely get any extra content in the second playthrough. When I inevitably get around to it,
there are two games. It says two supplemental games.
Nice.
Both of which are so there's The Longest Night and Lost Constellation. These side games provide extra content from the canon universe of Night in the Woods that's not in the actual game. They are free to download and play.
I am going to be all over that.
Longest Night is about maybe Greg and Angus watching the constellations. It's more of what you did with Angus on the Hill.
Oh, cool.
But with maybe Greg and Angus all together.
Oh, that could be fun.
Which sounds really cool. And then Lost Constellation is a bedtime story recited to May by her grandfather.
Oh, that wow. Yeah, okay.
That does sound
because he's a character who exists in the background.
He does exist in the background. Like, I feel like I know a lot about May's grandfather, and I've never seen him. You know, he starts the story, doesn't he?
He does. You also find a tooth in a safe. And the implication was that her grandfather was a member of the secret miner society.
Yes.
And I'm just like, which you can discover by reading newspaper clippings from Bay's storyline.
In the microfiche. Which is a really...
Yes, and it's a really intense, really cool story that you could easily just glance over. and not get any context. It was all because I found the tooth before I found that story.
Oh, really?
I believe I did. I can't remember. I might have got the order wrong way around. But it was only then that it pegged, and I went, oh, my God. Granddad was maybe a part of a secret society.
Did you speak to the... There's an old lady in the sewer system as well who has a lot of information about May's granddad.
Yes, yes, I did.
That was also very interesting.
Every interaction I had with a character, small or minor, I enjoyed to some degree.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there were some interactions that I barely cried. There were some interactions where I found quite chilling.
Mm.
And there were some interactions which I found were just like genuinely just affecting emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I've played many games that could do that outside of key pivotal scenes.
Yeah, not on that level. Not with like small characters.
Yeah.
Not like actually make you genuinely like moved with fucking Germ or whatever, you know? Like,
like
mad.
Most games have to build up to this massive crescendo. Like, you only really feel anything during major like character deaths or major turning points in the story. But here, I felt things just by wandering aimlessly around town for the thousandth time.
Yeah, you know? And seeing the bit, I don't know if you saw the bill. There's a little like billboard help board or whatever, and that's got stuff like a babysitting thing on there, and like the elastic band ball. You can just play with the elastic band ball. Like, even looking at some of the environments, I'm like, wow, this, like, the level of detail from start to finish is insane.
Yeah, Casey's missing poster there as well.
Also, there's stuff that made me really happy with Sharkle. You know, Sharkle just is a
little mascot,
little shark mascot, and you just click him every time you open the computer, and he goes woo-hoo-hoo! It's incredible.
It is adorable, I have to say.
It's just one of those things. I don't know. I think it's a special game.
I think it's an incredibly special game, and one I'm very, very glad that this recording, this session, has got me to play. Which is why I suppose things like this are there for, like, book clubs and stuff like that.
That was vicious.
Welcome back. Just discussing how, like, I'm glad that we've done this like book club, because I'd heard about this game a lot.
I remember mentioning it to you at one point as well.
You did, and I put it into my ever-expanding list of things I need to play.
Yeah.
But this gave me the excuse to actually just knuckle down and play it. Mm. I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, what I say to people when they recommend me games now, for the most part, it's like, oh, cool, I'll probably never play it.
It does give you an excuse to free up some time, right?
Yes, because these days, like, I pick a game and I play it till completion because I don't have time to bounce back and forth. So I'm very selective about what I play these days. And I'm glad this has taken up the time it did.
Good. Good. Do you have any extra thoughts about Night in the Woods, Lou?
I honestly just thought Night in the Woods was quite a good game and a very fun experience. I mean, as soon as I finished it, I thought about wanting to play the game again. I just ended up not having the time to do it, but it is something I definitely want to go back and explore again. I want to... The second time around, I think I want to explore everything.
You should take your time, absolutely. Yeah. I think the one thing... I know that you rushed it through because we were on sort of time stuff. I think the one thing that you should do on your second playthrough is just take as much time as you want to explore everything and just take it really slowly and just enjoy the world and how much there is in there. Because you miss so much with all the extra characters and stuff. Like, I'm sure you can tell from what we've been saying from the characters that we've noticed and enjoyed. You know, there are so many characters in that game that are incredibly well written that don't have anything to do with the plot whatsoever.
There's certainly a few.
Yeah,
it's definitely a game that if you blitz through it, you could get through it in like a day, as you say.
But you miss so much.
You miss so much. You miss something that could easily expand to like a week or so. I personally think it was entirely worth the extra time to go through all that stuff.
Hmm. I agree. Well, I think that's brought us to the end. Unless you've got a last thing.
I mean, I've not really got much else to say about the game.
No.
Yeah, I think the only thing I've got to say is if you haven't already played it, please, please play it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And give it a go.
I can fully agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it for us talking about Night in the Woods. This is the first episode of a new series of book club things that we're doing every month, as far as I can tell. If we can, you know, manage to get us all in one place at one time. But yeah, so that's that. So you can find us on Sometimes Video Games on Twitch, on Twitter, Facebook, that sort of thing. If you want to come follow us, where can people find you, Louis?
Nowhere.
Cool.
I don't exist. They can find me at Twitter. I suppose they can find me at the Twitter I don't post on, Berkus95. If they're into Destiny, they can check my YouTube channel, which is just called Berticus. If you're interested in playing Destiny for whatever reason, you can join us at the Tangled Chaya. I might link that somewhere. Maybe, maybe not.
Maybe. Paddy, where can people find you if they want to see more about what you have to say about things?
Oh, I say very little, for the most part. But you can follow me at phargreaves91 on Twitter. I am planning on engaging more with Twitter for the most part coming up, and just going to be making observations and engaging a bit more going forward. So you can easily find me there.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, everyone who came to either watch or listen or check it out in any way, shape or form. It's been nice having people interact with our stuff. And we will have another episode of this up next month. I believe we decided the next game is going to be a Plague Tale Innocence.
Yes.
And then from there, we don't know what the next game is going to be after that, but we'll figure it out.
But anyway, I'll tell you in the next episode.
Thank you very much for being here, and we'll see you next time. Goodbye.
See you there.
Bye-bye.